Let's start with basketball and the announcement by Coach Larrañaga yesterday. He's retiring immediately as Miami's head coach. What did you make of the announcement and the timing of it?
Well, a couple things. Miami was off to a horrific start this season, and Jim Larrañaga is 75 years old. So even though he did make comments about being exhausted in the modern era with name, image, likeness, and the transfer portal, and a lot of things that just were not part of college basketball or college athletics, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, when you retire in your 70s, it can't be a surprise, right? Other coaches, Roy Williams at Carolina, Mike Krzyzewski at Duke, Jim Boeheim at Syracuse, they made similar comments, but they were also in their 70s when they retired. So, yes, I'm sure that the modern world and the new rules are part of the equation, but Miami's horrific start combined with Jim Larrañaga being 75 years old, that's one of the oldest coaches in the history of Division I men's basketball, those things added together made it less of a surprise, along with that bad start causing the timing of that surprise.
You mentioned Coach K, Roy Williams, Jim Boeheim, and others. There are younger coaches that have also retired. Jay Wright, yep. Tony Bennett, just to name a couple. They said they don't like the direction college basketball is going. Kind of a broader question here, DG, but how does college basketball regulate itself and fix itself? Is there any way to do that?
I don't think that you can put the toothpaste back in the tube, really. I mean, you can tweak things. You can change the way the transfer portal works. You could change the timing of transfers. But the reality is, for a long time, college athletes were the soldiers helping make a whole lot of money in what became a multi-billion-dollar industry. And yet it was the coaches who had the freedom and the coaches who made the big buck. As much as I like and respect Jim Larrañaga, when he complained that, you know, he took his Miami team to the Final Four, he was upset that 8 players came to him after the season and said that they might be transferring out. I respect Coach Hill a lot, but the reality of the situation is that the team he took to the Final Four, 3 of his 4 best players were incoming transfers that Miami had essentially purchased through the transfer portal. So there's a little bit of just tone deafness to those comments. The reality is these players have become an essential part of this multi-billion-dollar system. And these wealthy coaches are just going to have to get used to the fact that now the soldiers have many of the same rights that they do. And that's something that they should have had, those players, for a long time.
Let's turn our attention to football now, DG, if we could. State and East Carolina play each other Saturday in the Military Bowl. As you break down this matchup, what stands out to you?
I'm always curious about who's going to play.
You know?
In a lot of these bowl games, so many players have opted out or entered the transfer portal or turned pro early that it's a skeleton of what the regular depth chart looked like during the season. The difference in this game between the Pirates and the Wolfpack, I mean, you know the deal. They're located, what, 60 minutes apart, and yet they only play each other. I think it's an average of every other year. Obviously, you make your own non-conference schedule, so at various times, State hasn't wanted to play ECU or vice versa. So the players who do participate, even though both teams have mediocre records, I think one of the usual concerns of a bowl game, you know, do both teams really care? I don't think we'll have a concern when the Pirates play the Wolfpack because everybody knows how much that means in this neighborhood. And even if we don't see all the best players because of transfers, I think we're going to see the best effort from both sides.
You mentioned how many people actually care. That could be said maybe for UNC and UConn in the Fenway Bowl on Saturday, especially given the news of Bill Belichick's hiring at UNC. What's the dynamic at play in this bowl game for the Tar Heels?
Well, one thing that's interesting about the Belichick hire is that a lot of really good players who, after hearing the Mac Brown news, had put their name into the transfer portal. Not all of them, but most of them, including some of the best players, took their name out as soon as Bill Belichick was hired, you know, making them available for the bowl game rather than the Tar Heels having to deal with an even more extremely skeleton-type crew. So it's only the 6-6 Tar Heels against 8-4 UConn. You know Carolina wants to finish with a winning record. You know they want to end the Mac Brown era, even though he's not coaching in this game, in the right way. All those players being recruited by Mac Brown and his staff. And I think they also want to put on tape things that they know Bill Belichick and the new staff are going to be scrutinizing in terms of who's where on the depth chart going into spring practice in a few months.
You mentioned these bowl games and the landscape of college football. Are we at the point or going to be at the point soon where these non-playoff games become irrelevant?
It's a great question, and I think the proof will be in the TV numbers because it's been crazy. I have heard for 20 years or longer people say that they don't care about the bowl season. They think it's ridiculous that 6-6 teams go to bowls, et cetera. But as long as a million people or more watch, and for the really big games, it's more than 10 million people, you know, watching these college football playoff games, as long as a million-plus people watch, then it is a viable economic commodity. And that's why there are so many bowls nowadays. You know, the number 30 years ago might have been 10. There are now 40, right? So, and it all comes down to during the holidays when more people than usual are home and there's a little bit less going on the sports TV calendar. Almost every single day there's at least one bowl game on TV, and some days, of course, there's a half a dozen. And a million-plus people, you can theorize why they're watching. You know, maybe they love football that much. Maybe they have, they've laid some money on the game, so they have some self-interest. Maybe it's just their form of entertainment during the holidays as a tradition. But as long as even the worst games are getting almost a million or a little more than a million viewers, I don't think they're going to go away anytime soon.
DG, as I let you go, the college football playoff, at least in the first-round games, went chalk, according to the seeds last weekend. Looking ahead to the quarterfinals, do you see any potential upsets out there?
Well, the fact that Georgia's starting quarterback, Carson Beck, is unavailable for the Bulldogs, who I think are one of the best teams, you know, maybe one of the two best teams, as the rankings indicate, in all of college football, I think that gives Notre Dame a much better chance than they would have had against the Carson Beck, who's played in a lot of big games and won a lot of big games for the Bulldogs, so there's a possibility. I think I'm fascinated to see how Boise State plays against Penn State. I don't think the Nittany Lions are a great team offensively, and obviously Boise State has the running back, Gentee, who's absolutely a dynamo and one of the more amazing players in all of college football in recent years. So, anything can happen at this point. I'm not sure that even the best teams are indestructible. I mean, number one, Oregon gets Ohio State, which is probably the toughest of all of these lower-seeded teams. So I think it's going to be what college football wanted to see, and that's four games where anybody can win, even though we know who the favorites are, and those are some of the most familiar names in terms of the super heavyweights of college football.
David Glenn of the North Carolina Sports Network. DG, always appreciate the time and the perspective. Happy New Year to you and your family. Look forward to talking again real soon.
Right back at you, my friend. Thank you, Chris.